Blog Talk Radio.
Spectrum technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcell Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network. Better than diamond rings, that's why
we're here to sing. Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Hey, what's going on? We are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We got pretty much a little bit under an hour here to talk about news and notes within the sport of boxing, and also a couple of results that happened, you know, over the course of Saturday. And there was a couple of fights happening. Of course, Saturday. You know, we had like one guy of note that did fight yesterday, and that was through through Premier Boxing Champions, and you know, that was on ESPN, and it involved Jamel Herring, who, you know, came into this fight 15-0 with 8 KOs against Denis Shevchenko. And Shevchenko was, you know, pretty much a veteran in the game there. He came in there at 36-2-1. And, you know, the expectation was that Jamel Herring was basically supposed to, you know, step up in competition and see if he could stay undefeated. But Shevchenko was, you know, the aggressor in this fight. He was a shorter fighter, but he was just, you know, basically the aggressor, still coming at Jamel Herring. Jamel Herring, even though he was, like, using his jab, that still wasn't enough to, you know, really phase Denis Shevchenko. And Shevchenko, you know, really threw Jamel Herring, and especially early in the second round, as he, you know, got him with the left hand that basically, you know, backed up Jamel Herring very significantly. And you know, when the ref saw that, he basically thought that the ropes saved a potential fall or knockdown to the canvas by Jamel Herring. And so the ref scored that a knockdown in the second round, and he was still reeling from that, and then still, like, went over to the later rounds, and Shevchenko was still, you know, having his way. As, like I was saying before, Shevchenko was not being fazed by Herring's, you know, punches from a distance, and, you know, still could get into Jamel Herring. So, you know, once Denis Shevchenko was able to get to the inside and basically, you know, hurt Jamel Herring over the course of 10 rounds. And, you know, near the end of that 10th round, you know, Herring was, you know, just getting beaten, you know, and there was, like, blood coming from his mouth and over his right eye. And so the ref stopped the fight, you know, with, like, 36 seconds left in the 10th round for Shevchenko to move towards 37 wins, 2 losses and 1 draw, notching his 20th KO of his career, while Herring basically suffers his first loss there. So that's a definite setback for Jamel Herring there, as, you know, he was, you know, seeing if he could, you know, go up the ranks there, and you know, it didn't necessarily happen that way. We're gonna move on here real quick with the co-feature that was on Premier Boxing Champions, which had Silky Wilkie Camford going up against Patrick Szymanski from Poland. And Szymanski was the, you know, the younger fighter, pretty much about 8 years younger than Camfort. And he just, you know, almost got a near shutout decision win over Wilkie Camfort as a unanimous decision. One judge scored it 98-92, while two judges scored it 99-91. And, you know, with that, you know, Szymanski, you know, stays undefeated there. While Camfort goes to 21-3-1. Also, as part of the undercard for this event, we had, you know, one fighter that won a welterweight title at one point, Kermit Cinchon. He got a, you know, a unanimous decision over Carlos Garcia, and this was, you know, basically a kind of like a comeback fight for Kermit Cinchon to, you know, get him, you know, into, you know, in-ring shape, see how he's looking in the ring after, you know, a lengthy layoff, going up against a guy that was 10-15-1, and it was an 8-round fight. So, Cinchon got a, you know, unanimous 8-round decision there, and this was basically a hometown fight for him, as, you know, this card was over in Reading, Pennsylvania, so he was able to get that win there. Just real quick, we got area code 202. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on? It's World Rank. Just checking in. Not a lot of boxing action this week, but just good to talk boxing.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't really an active you know, week here with the July 4th holiday coming up tomorrow, but we did have, you know, one card for Premier Boxing Champions. They're trying to, you know, well, they're, like, filling up with card after card after card over the course of the summer. And so, I mean, we had, of course, we had the previous week, you know, Sean Porter and Keith Thurman. So, and, you know, some people are still buzzing about that. So this one right here was kind of like a thing for, probably for Jamil Herring to try to get back up in the ranks, going up against a veteran like Denis Shavkat. But Shavkat had other plans and was, like, aggressive. He really wasn't fazed by Jamil Herring's flurries and punches. And he was just hurting Jamil Herring over the course of 10 rounds and ended up scoring that win. So what you got on that, if you were able to catch it?
Yeah, I was able to catch most of it. I thought it was a good matchup, good 50-50 matchup. Denis Shatakoff is top 15, top 10 guy at 135. Jamil Herring, the 2012 Olympian. Haven't seen much of him on TV, but, I mean, it was a good 50-50 fight on paper. But, you know, when you step up in competition, you know, things like this happen. I give credit to Shatakoff and the way he was able to fight his fight and make it his type of fight. So credit to him. I wonder, you know, they were kind of touting Herring in terms of his Olympic pedigree and, you know, on being a former, being a veteran or what have you. I would think, you know, they would probably give him an easier opponent, you know, for this date, but they didn't, you know. So Denis came in and he did his thing.
Yeah, he went in there and said that, you know, basically, you know, this was kind of like a, I don't know if it would be like a crossroads fight for him, but if he wasn't able to get this win, I mean, it wouldn't be too sure if he was going to, you know, get any fights of that level after that point. If he was, you know, able to lose against Jamil Herring, he wouldn't have been able to come back to any type of fights of that magnitude.
yeah, it was a big, you know, big fight for both guys. Shayakov to keep his name in, you know, in the lightweight rankings, is coming off a couple of losses. Herring, you know, really the first time he's a main eventer, you know, and it, again, on paper it was a good matchup. But Shayakov, he dominated the fight. He was able to make it a good inside tough fight. And a lot of times with these prospects, you know, they are highly touted, but I don't know when it comes to infighting, it just seems like there's something missing with being able to cope with some infighting. You see it with when Lomachenko took his fight. You see it with other prospects when they step up to the professional level and they fight a guy who's a good inside fighter. A lot of these boxers, they struggle getting accustomed to that style.
Right. Yeah. I think Lomachenko had to deal with that against Salido, you know, who was a bona fide veteran in the professional ranks. I mean, although, you know, Loma had that very extensive amateur background, it's a whole lot different animal when you're dealing with the professional ranks and dealing with, you know, a professional fighter that's been there multiple years and, you know, has you know, they know the ins and outs of different rings and the professional ranks, how a referee acts, how he reacts to a few things, and, you know, kind of like, you know, maybe bends rules a little bit here and there. So, I mean, inside fighting is a very, very important, you know, component to becoming a great fighter and making the adjustments to those that are against you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's very important. And for Herring, he's already late 20s, early 30s. So this was a big loss for him in terms of his prospect style because he, you know, he had to be moved kind of quick being, you know, going forward now, being as though he's 29 and 30 with that pedigree. And this loss really hurts him going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's 30 years old there. And, when you're 30 around this point or so, it's kind of, well, I mean, you could still, like, you know, have the opportunity to move up or whatever it is, but as far as, like, having overall success within the ranks that he's in right now, he's going to have to make adjustments to his game in order to, you know, be able to fight better on the inside against his opponents. Real quick, we got area code 205 with us. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, James? It's Mike Gray, man. How you doing?
Doing good there, Mike. You know, I'm chilling here during the holiday weekend. But you know me, I'm kind of into that whole Caribbean type thing. So this is about 3 weeks in a row that I've done all that. So I'm still trying to recover.
Yeah, I see your pictures on Facebook. I live back here in the city, man.
Hey, all I know is, man, I'm trying to, you know, have the best time of my life when I be going out there doing that stuff. So, hey, that's what the name of the game is sometimes.
And I respect it, brother. I respect it.
Yeah. We actually here talking about the Denis Shevchenko, Jamel Herring fight that happened on Fear Boxing Champions on ESPN yesterday. Jamel Herring came in there undefeated, but Shevchenko, you know, who's a good little veteran there, more than, you know, 35 fights, was able to take the fight to Jamel Herring and basically beat him to a 10-round TKO victory for Denis Shevchenko.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch the fight. I saw the highlights of it, but I didn't watch it. And I'm trying to remember because I think I saw one of Jamel Herring's fights before. And if this is the same guy, I may have saw deficiencies, but I'm going to keep my mouth quiet because I don't remember. But I didn't catch the fight, so I'll just hear what y'all got to say if y'all don't mind repeating what kind of happened.
Well, I mean, Shevchenko, you know, used his veteran skills against, you know, Jamel Herring. And before you got in, we were talking about inside fighting that Shevchenko was able to, you know, whether the flurries and jabs that Jermell Herring was throwing and then getting to the inside, and by the time he got to the inside, Shavkat was able to work him and, like, really get, you know, punches, good, significant punches to Jermell Herring's head and body, and scored, like, a second-round knockdown, even though Herring hit the ropes, but the overall momentum that he was going back from the right hand of Shavkat, he would have dropped to the canvas. So referee scored that a knockdown for Shavkat, and he eventually was able to, you know, batter Jermell Herring to get a 10-round TKO victory as the ref stopped the fight near the end of the 10th round. And so that's Herring's first loss of his career right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So was it just a bad matchup, or like what do you think it was? He needed a more of a step before Shavkat, or whatever his name is.
I mean, I would probably say that, yeah, he probably needed somebody else to step in the ring with first before going against a guy that was going into his 40th fight, only had two losses, and his two losses were, you know, for a title belt. So, I mean, Shavkat has been in, you know, high-profile fights before, so he knows how to, you know, he knows the real ins and outs of the ring, and I really didn't feel that Herring was, you know, very prepared for somebody like Shavkat. World Rank, what do you think?
Yeah, first of all, I want to give Mike Grady credit for calling the Thurman win. I know we gave him hell for the calling out the Bradley loss, so I'm going to give him credit for calling the Thurman fight right. But in terms of the actual, what was the question again? I'm sorry.
No, a reference to the overall experience of Shavkat being a factor in this fight against Jermell Herring, and maybe Herring would have been better off fighting somebody that had a little bit less experience in the ring.
When I looked at the odds Friday and Thursday, and I was, you know, I was looking at them to see if there was anything that I would want to take part in, and I saw that Herring was a favorite. I hadn't seen him live, but I knew of him, and I felt like if you look at Shavkat's fights where he lost to boxers, and I think when they made this fight, they were thinking that, hey, I think, you know, their team was probably thinking, yes, I'm probably on the level of Miguel Vasquez in terms of boxing ability. I am a 2012 Olympian. I think I'd be able to handle myself, you know, as better or even as good as Miguel Vasquez did. And I think, you know, obviously he couldn't do what Bartholomew did to him. So I think two things that he made a mistake on. I think he overrated his inside boxing ability. I didn't think he thought that it would take as much as it did to beat Shavkat because, again, Rancis made it look easy, and Miguel Vasquez beat him, but he did a lot of holding. And I think what Herring didn't do was do any type of holding to stop or derail Shavkat from coming forward. He just thought that his offense was good enough and, you know, to be able to stop Shavkat in his tracks. And obviously that wasn't good enough.
Right, right. No, for me, I mean, like I was saying, with Shavkat's overall experience, and like you were saying, I mean, even though Shavkat did lose to boxers, it didn't seem like Jermell Herring was somebody that had enough, you know, boxing skills to keep Shavkat or at least, you know, frustrated, or at least have him try to reset what he was going to do, or, you know, change up his plan, you know?
Yeah, I think he tried, especially early in the fight. I just think he thought somehow that he had enough to detract Dennis from coming forward. And, you know, he might actually be a bigger puncher than both Rances and Vasquez, but for some reason he couldn't hurt Dennis, and he couldn't stop his forward momentum, and that, you know, that kind of cost him, because he was in a pocket a lot too, and that kind of cost him.
Yeah, it did. So, I mean, overall, I think that Shavikov may be able to get another shot at, you know, one of the minor belts that are out there. But otherwise, I don't think this is something where Jermell Herring will be able to come back, you know, very quickly from it, because he really got, like, beat during this fight. So, I mean, this is probably like a step down for him. He's probably going to, you know, go down a couple notches and try to slowly get his way back into the fight game or the rankings within that division, in that sense. You got something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's going to be hard. I think yesterday's fight was kind of, you have a chance to put your name up there as a contender with the likes of Robert Easter and some of these other guys, and your name could be mentioned in that breath. Now, you know, I think if you'd have won yesterday, he could kind of call, you know, what his next step is. I think now he has to, you know, he's at the age where I don't know if he can afford to take step down, you know, because he's at his peak age-wise. I don't know if his ability is peak-wise, but at his age, at 30, you know, he's as good as he's going to get, I believe. So now he's in a position where he has to wait for the call to get a good big fight instead of being the person who's able to call someone out.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Just seeing here, I was going to go into the next thing that was going on. So let me see. Trying to see what that undercard fight was there. We had Wilkie Camfort basically in a fight against Patrick Szymanski. And, Camfort was basically getting shut out in that fight. So, hey, World Rank, what you got on that one?
When I looked at the Szymanski fight, I saw a guy that, in terms of Szymanski, a Polish fighter who, once he steps up, he's not going to do well. I think he doesn't have a lot on his punches. You know, I think a lot of people would line up to face him because he has a good come-forward style. He can box a little bit, but he doesn't hit hard. And he looks like his defense is kind of leaky. So I think, you know, you're going to be hearing his name a lot because he's a good opponent.
Sure. All right. My thing with Wilkie Camfort was that, I mean, he's kind of like a, you know, like a, I would say like a tweener fighter. Like, it's nobody that, you know, would say would, you know, be considered, you know, I'm on the highest ranked in the division. So, I mean, to get basically shut out by, you know, this guy that he was fighting, you know, that just basically puts him at the near the bottom of those, like, top 15, top 20 rankings for that division or for a particular belt that would be on the line.
Yeah, when I look at him, I see somebody. He's a professional boxer, but I don't see anything, you know, in terms of worth mentioning. I don't think he's going to ever win an important fight. You might hear his name, you know, going forward. I just think both of them are good opponents, good guys to be on an undercard. Maybe, you know, somebody that would face Kermit Cintron next. Both of them, they look like somebody that would face Cintron next.
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably say like a little bit of something for the
thing with Kermit Sinchon coming back, but I mean he was basically in a eight round fight. So I mean it was nothing really to me. It was nothing really to speak about because he was able to go up against Carlos Garcia, who was like 10-15-1, and you know somebody like Sinchon. I don't think that Sinchon, even though he had the layoff as long as he's had, should be fighting a guy that's like 10-15.
Yeah, I think they're protecting him. I think they're protecting him for some PBC name. I don't know somebody at 54 or 60, you know, who's in need of a name, and I think they're gonna put Sinchon. I think they're just trying to save him. I think the type of fight you know he was in yesterday is just basically to keep him you know active and to keep his name out there so he can be fair to somebody.
Gotcha. All right, real quick, we got another caller on the line. Area code 813, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, JBZ? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. What's up, World Ring? Just getting dialed in, so trying to catch up with you guys.
What's going on, sir?
Yeah. Yeah, Terrell, we just went over the, you know, the Premier Boxing Champions card.
Yesterday, so we had, you know, Silky Roki Camport basically in a fight that was going up against Szymanski. And Szymanski got like a unanimous decision win. Basically shut him out at a 98-92 scorecard and a 91 scorecard for two judges. And we also had that two against Joe Herring. Get knocked down the 10th round by Denis Shapovalov. And also, former welterweight title holder Kermit Sinchon was basically trying to get back into the game. Had like a little 8-round fight against Carlos Garcia, who had like a losing record.
Yeah, I wasn't able to see the fight. That was due to my obligations. The only fight of particular interest to me was the Herring fight. I mean, I'll speak on that in a second, but in regards to what I just heard about you guys say about the Sinchon fight, Sinchon was definitely a player in the welterweight junior and 154 division for quite a while. Had some great fights. I've never had nothing bad to say about the guy. Once again, you got a fighter that went, retired, got out of the game or whatever for whatever reason, and even that on the retirement subject. Look at what's the guy's name that lost to Tim Bradley in his last fight?
Marquez?
Jesse Vargas.
Yeah, Vargas. And you not Jesse Vargas. No. Guy from California. He
Marquez. Marquez.
No. He lost to Tim G. Bradley Jr. in his last fight, and we broke that fight down on the show because in that fight he looked like a shot fighter. Goodness, what's his name? Brandon Rios.
Rios.
In that regard, yeah. He retired after that fight, and now months later, he's unretired all of a sudden, 3 months, and looking to fight again after change of trainer. But back to Sinchon, guy that's been out there, out of the ring for a while, and I certainly agree with both the point both you guys made. He definitely, the type of fighter is with his record, his resume, and his name, he should have fought a better opponent, even coming back after a long time, definitely. And at the same time, like I said, they're probably just protecting him to try to get him lined up to be an opponent for someone because of his name. So I certainly agree with both of you guys.
Did he stop the guy yesterday?
Who? Sinchon? No.
I think that says something. You got a guy in there that's 10-15-2, and you got a former world champion. Even though it's a tune-up, but, I mean, those are guys you probably, if you're on that world level, you're supposed to be getting out of there.
Yeah, that's true. And, that may say something as far as, like, you know, what Sean is able to do now. If he can't, you know, really put something together against a, you know, a guy that had a losing record, you know, what is he going to do again?
Got something that's
like a competition. You know what I That might be a little concern there. All right. Yeah, we're pretty much like over a half hour into the show. We got about a half hour left in the live show here. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio through the MRN Broadcast channel, if you want to talk boxing, call in at 347-237-5539. All right. Basically, since that was like the only thing as far as like boxing matches were concerned, pretty much going to go into like some news and notes over the course of the week. And one of the things that, you know, I caught, you know, here in the middle of the week or near the end of this week is the news about what went on with WADA, WADA, and Alexander Povetkin. Ryan Bensky, who was the main promoter for, Alexander Povetkin, says that WADA has cleared Alexander Povetkin of any wrongdoing in reference to the drug testing that happened pretty much over the course of March and April before the scheduled fight between Povetkin and Deontay Wilder for the WBC Heavyweight Championship. And as a result, they're basically going to, it may seem like the WBC will also clear Povetkin, and that will have him remain as the number one contender or the mandatory to Deontay Wilder's WBC Heavyweight Championship. Now, while, the original scheduled fight was canceled, Wilder is able to take a voluntary defense. They'll have their voluntary defense against Chris Areola scheduled for July 16th. This may be, you know, kind of a blow to what's going on as far as, like, the whole situation with Wilder and Povetkin, because if they were able to go forward with this fight, Wilder would have had, like, a career-high payday of nearly $5 million. And if they're able to see if they can get this fight put together once again, it's very doubtful that he will be able to get that type of a payout. Just being in love, what's your overall thoughts on? I'm going to start with Mike Grady.
So, to my understanding, it happened last. You can hear me, right?
Yeah.
So, to my understanding, what happened was they had the fight set up. Preventing got caught with some, substance in his, body. And so the fight got called off because of the WBC. And then now they're saying that whatever went on, Povetkin is allowed to continue, or wasn't enough of the substance in his body or something like that. Like, what exactly did they say? Because I didn't read the article.
Well, the thing is about, like, there were two tests that came through that didn't have anything show up for melatonin, and then there was one that did show up for melatonin, and so with that one, it was like kind of like 0.00 something micrograms of melatonin, and then after the fight was like basically called off, they tested them again, and it showed, and there were like negative traces of melatonin after that. So it's like three tests were negative, one was positive, and so they're trying to say that after all of that, they just made a ruling that WADA just basically cleared Alexander Povetkin, saying that the sample, they don't know what, either where that positive sample came from, or it wasn't like enough to actually affect the fight. Like, they could have, it's kind of like they're saying they could have went forward with the fight even though they said he had a positive test. It's just that the level of melatonin that showed up in that particular test was, very minuscule, that it shouldn't have had any effects of, having a fight take place.
Yeah. So I do know that, you know, taking these drugs is a science. So I do know that people definitely say take it exactly this day at this time so it can be out your system by exactly this day by this time when you take the test. You know, who knows if the man was taking some or not. I think with the big push for them to clean up the sport, if I was Deontay Wilder, I wouldn't have wanted to fight him either, you know, with the thought that he did have, you know, needles in his arms, kind of like how Pacquiao used to when he didn't want to fight Mayweather, allegedly. But, I mean, now that the fight could possibly be on again and they reinstated him, then after Wilder beats Areola, then it could be a possibility for another fight. But I guess it'll be sometime maybe in September. But I do think it's probably that's kind of weird, though, that, you know, the one test did, and I guess they do have false positives. So I'm going to defer to someone else, and maybe I have more comment.
I mean, yeah, that could be another thing, too, is if it's, you know, false positive on that. World Rank, what you got?
I don't really have nothing on this, man. I don't know what to think, what to believe, what false positives, positives. They come back a month later and say he's clean. I don't know, and I defer to you guys on that.
All right, gotcha. Terrell, what you got?
Yeah, man, this is a mess. It's a boxing mess, and mainly it's a legal mess. I mean, I think, James, you made a comment on social media the other day. You said that it would be nice if they could cancel the Areola fight and get right back to the Povetkin fight. But we all know it don't work that way. It's not quite that easy.
Right.
You know, other than just making it like that. Because at the same time, on the Wilder camp, they're hurt. They're disappointed. In the fact that the fight didn't go on, and also monetarily, they're missing a huge payday from that point.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you throw in addition to that, like we talked about on social media this week, that Rubinsky, that promotion side, they went through the same exact thing a couple years ago with Letbia and Guillermo Jones, where Guillermo Jones tested positive he tested positive after that fight, and for that point, they had to sue to get their purse, and they did win. They did get their purse, and now they're going through the same thing. Not the same thing. The shoes on the other foot now, and of course I won't curse on the show, but like a bitch, they did a countersuit against Wilder, basically defamation of character. Against Wilder and stuff like that. So now you throw in bruised egos. And now you throw in the fact that who wants to give in? And once again, now you have a legal mess. And going back to the results and stuff like that, it was just pretty funny how the WBA just held out for a while. They said, well, we're going to wait to see what happened with these results and stuff like that. Well, the number one thing, I don't know all the details of the testing and stuff like that, but look at a lot of the Russian athletes and stuff like that. I forgot the tennis girl's name. She got suspended for pretty much the same thing.
Sure.
Even though she's still fighting. Yep. She's pretty much fighting that. And not to mention a bunch of the Russian Olympic athletes. They're going through the same trouble right now. A lot of times where there's smoke, there's fire. And I definitely think it's more than what we know here about these results and stuff like that. But like I said, legally, this is a mess. But common sense-wise, it would be lovely if we could push aside this Areola fight and get these two guys in a ring sooner rather than later, but it just doesn't work that way. So I hope that these two sides can sit down and get some common sense and get over these bruised egos and get this fight on, I say, hopefully by September, October. Because I think at this point, the Areola fight will go on. That date's already been reserved. Contract's already been drawn up. So he's not going to throw that away. I mean, because if he did that, now you're sitting on this, Wilder's sitting on the shelf even longer without fighting. And he's already said that he wants to be an active fighter. So me personally, if I was him, I would take the Areola fight. A lot of people are not fans of that fight, but he wants to be an active fighter. I commend him for that. But other than that, hopefully these guys can come to sit down at a table and work this thing out and give these Bruce egos.
How much longer
after the first contest did they take the second round of tests or the two tests that you said came back negative? Because, you know, if he supposedly, let's say, took some, supposed to have been out of his system by the time the fight came, then, of course, it's going to be out of the system a week later or something like that.
I'm not sure. There's a couple months back, like around April, when they actually made the announcement of the cancellation or the detection that Povetkin had no donor. But they usually do the test pretty much 3 weeks, 2 weeks apart. So I think approaching April 21st or April 23rd was supposed to be the date, I think. So I think they were trying to test around April 7th and maybe April 21st or it's April 14th and the end of March or something like that, how they had it scheduled. But it was just something where, you know, they were able to just catch the small trace. And after that, they got another, you know, a negative as far as what showed up in reference to what was going on within Alexander Povetkin's body. So, I said, it's going to be a quality situation. That's going to be back and forth for a good amount of time. So even though you may request that a fight don't happen between those two, maybe in October or something like that, with those lawsuits that have come up by Rybinski against Deontay Wilder and Lou DiBella, I'm not necessarily sure if that's going to go through, because it's what's the point of, you know, being, if they're able to come through without having, you know, without the lawsuit being dismissed or nothing like that, it'll cost DiBella and his team money. So it's why fight the guy when you're basically, you done lost? You may end up losing what you would have been paid in order to fight Povetkin, you know? So that might be an overall lost cause.
You know? Well, yeah. Once again, just on that note, we got people want to be the bigger man, want to be the, it's about us. And like I said, the fact Wilder lost money, he lost money, and it's not his fault. Legally, logically, morally, that's not right. That is definitely not right. And like I said, you got an example right there, right before you, of the same promoter doing the same thing to somebody else. So why would you not legally, why would you not want to pursue that? You know your chances of winning are huge. You know that. So
yeah,
it's going to take a lot of negotiations.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. All right, moving on here to more news and notes within the sport of boxing. Of course, you know, over the past month or so, there's been a large back and forth between Saul Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin as far as trying to negotiate to have a fight done. And the WBC basically tried to force the hand of Canelo Alvarez and Golden Boy Promotions. So they ended up relinquishing the belt, said, go ahead, you can have it, Gennady Golovkin, we good. And so they're going to be having Canelo Alvarez will be fighting Liam Smith for the WBO Light Middleweight Championship September 17th at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. And Luis Ortiz is scheduled to be on the undercard to fight. I think it's Alexander Usyk, while Ortiz defends his interim WBA Heavyweight Championship. So in the meantime, Gennady Golovkin is looking around for an opponent here and there. And one guy seems to have stepped up to take the challenge, and that guy is Chris Eubank Jr. And it's, you know, as of, I think it was, Thursday, maybe Thursday or so, they were fairly close to getting the fight done and signed. They're trying to get a TV deal through Sky Sports to actually make it happen. But I Gennady Golovkin to have it against Chris Eubank Jr., and it may be in England, maybe in the O2 Arena or somewhere within London. So wanted to get initial thoughts on that. I'm going to start with Mike Brady.
So as far as Canelo is concerned, I mean, so I think that the bigger boy should make the decision over the littler boy in terms of enormity of sports. And the risk that Canelo would have to take in order to fight Gennady Golovkin, I think should be worth it. I definitely think he should fight him. I do. He should fight him, but with the circumstances are right for him. Until I ain't mad at him for fighting the Liam getting enough. You know, if he fights at 154, then I'm kind of like scratching my head because I thought he was a middleweight. I don't know what he is now. On the Gennady Golovkin front, him fighting Eubank Jr., I think it's good. Like, when we talked about it last time, I want to see the fight. At least I know Eubank Jr., when he throws punches, he throws them with, like, intensity. Like, you could see when he try to hurt people. And
right.
So, in that respect, it'll be good to see Gennady Golovkin possibly get hit from somebody who's trying to knock his head off. But, you know, the fact that he don't put his hands up, I think that's going to bode very unwell for him. And, you know, he get hit a few times, you know, clean with his hands down. Yeah, the story's going to be pretty short. But it's interesting to see, and I think it'll be a big fight, though.
Right, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of like, If they have this fight signed, I'm kind of like looking forward to it because I mean I like Chris Eubank Jr. a little bit. Of course, you know the history with his father, he did he was able to get like the European middleweight championship against Nick Blackwell, basically you know beating him into retirement almost, and then you know over the course of that previous weekend, June 25th, I'm in the undercard of that. Anthony Joshua, Dominic Brazil fight, he was able to score a KO victory. And so he is ready to move forward with Eddie Hearn to see if they can get this fight together between him and Gennady Golovkin. And, you know, I'm looking forward to this particular fight to see how it is in England. It'll be like a whole different experience for Gennady Golovkin as he's had most of his fights here in the States, being based in Los Angeles and, you know, basically having, you know, fight fans come to his fights here in the States, but not like an actual, you know, following like a lot of these guys from out of the country, like from England or Mexico or, you know, maybe Argentina or something like that. So I'll be seeing what happens in reference to that. They're able to, you know, make that fight or get it together. World Rank, what you got on it?
All right, so the Canelo aspect, after his last fight, we discussed, you know, some name opponents that, you know, who possibly Canelo could face. I threw out Billy Joe Saunders. Again, not for the reason of the level of competition, but what money could be brought to the table with the least amount of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, or some way, you know, Canelo thought to the aspect of, you know, there's a UK opponent at some weight, either 54 or 60, that can still bring some type of money to the table, that can actually bring a belt to the table, that can bring something to the table. I'm opposed to the fight only because after, like, you know, Mike Grady was saying something to the point of we had talked about Pacquiao and we had talked about in terms of being okay with certain fights. What seems to happen is once you get to the top of the food chain, people are allowed to make fights that aren't really good for the fans or make sense for the fans. So when you get to the top of the chain, you no longer want to fight the best. You just want to protect certain things. And that's why, you know, I'm opposed to those type of fights because, you know, he has an opportunity to make money with whoever he fights, why not take a challenge? And then only to say, you know, that he doesn't fuck around or whatever, and then drops the belt and then moves down a division. All that just doesn't sit well with me. So I'm not a fan of the fight. In terms of Eubank Jr., I pose this question. There's two type of opinions that you can have, the eye test and what resume. And I normally go with resume, but just off the eye test, to me, I think Eubank, to me, is the best opponent Triple G has been in, what, in terms of eye test, in terms of what I see. I don't know if anybody agrees with me or disagrees, but that's just my take on it.
I mean, right now, at the point where he is, I agree too.
If Willie Monroe had it mentally, he could have. It could have been a different. I feel like there could have been a different outcome to the fight. Had he not just caved in mentally, he was in the fight. Like when he quit, he was in the fight. Like all he had to do was just keep swinging. I know it's not that easy. I know I'm on the outside looking in, but yeah, he probably has the best matchup. So I'm saying a new point here, but. I think Willie Monroe could have just went to the next level past what he thought he was capable of because he was touching him. But I agree with you.
Well, for me, I definitely I think it was Warwick that just spoke about the fact that eye test wise, Eubank Jr. will potentially be the best opponent that Triple G has felt. I certainly agree with that. And you know what? For myself, I need to go back and look at the fight from when Eubank Jr. fought the champion. What's the other champion's name? I forgot. Saunders, I believe it was. I need to go back and watch the fight because he lost that fight. So, because I think we can all stand a lot to learn about Eubank Jr. And I tell you, before I even discuss that, my number one thought is, even though Eubank Jr. has not gained a world title and stuff like that, keep in mind this fight is going to be in his backyard. And sometimes we have upsets in boxing, and I'm looking very, very forward to this fight because I keep watching some of Eubank Jr.'s training videos, his worth ethic and stuff like that. Not to mention his stature that he's going to bring into the ring, and with the stuff I'm seeing, with the way he's training for to be a world class fighter, if he's not there already, you know. So I'm really looking forward to this fight. In regards to the Canelo topic, in regards to the political aspect of it, I know I said before on the show, it's only so many fighters that could actually drop their belt, and for the reason of positioning, because you know, so many people fight so hard just to get a belt around their waist, and now here you got a guy that actually dropped his belt in order to be forced into a position to take a fight, and I'm not a fan of that either. But we've seen other people do that. But like I said, only certain A-level fighters can get into in position to do that. It's sad, but at the same time, you know, from Triple G's side, he want to rush and get this fight done to try to prove a point that he is what he is. You know, that remains to be seen. We all going to be waiting for that. But he better be careful because like we just said, he probably has the best opponent that's going to be he'll be facing in Eubank Jr. coming up. But Canelo, I mean, that's a fight that we all expect to win, even though from the Smith side, they're saying that he's a formidable opponent. He very well may be. He very well may be, you know, but we'll see. But I'm more interested in the Triple G Eubank fight at this point because I think this guy could really step up and do something. And in that quote, he could shock the world. So they better not sleep on him, not at all. But just once again, like Warwick said, it's kind of just sad to see the politics taking over what should be logical decisions to move forward with a particular fight. And just even have to swallow that old thing, oh, just let it simmer. Man, come on, man, just get these – sign them up and let them fight. But like I said, it's not that easy because it's a world built and revolves around money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it basically – it just comes down to money in this case. I think like World Ranked kind of like hit at one other guy that Canelo could have fought at the middleweight division, and that's Billy Joe Saunders, where he could have, you know, still gotten the same amount of money or payout
fighting Billy Joe Saunders, Eddie Willis, and fighting Liam Smith. But, I mean, this time around, he's just, you know, going a step down, back down to 154. As far as, like, what Canelo is doing, I mean, he's basically getting the advice from Oscar De La Hoya, who years ago put down the thing for catchweight, even though he only had one, you know, one middleweight championship to Bernard Hopkins, multiple middleweight championships, to say that, okay, you want to fight me, you go down to a catchweight of 157 in order to get the fight made. And the thing was, Bernard Hopkins was the one that, you know, he was able to say, hey, I mean, I don't mind making the concession. I could go down to 157 pounds to get this fight made. And so, you know, with that basically being in Canelo's ear, he's saying, hey, come on, Golovkin, hey, if you want it, come down to 155. And if the WBC wanted to, you know, exercise that mandatory defense, which, you know, still to this day, I'm still trying to look for any other fighter that who held a, you know, a heavy or a championship from another organization that was able to win a interim belt from another organization. I'm still looking into that, seeing if anybody else was able to do that. But I haven't really seen anything yet. But aside from that matter, you know, we'll still say that Golovkin was the number one contender for the WBC middleweight championship. And so since they weren't able to get that fight done or try to keep within that mandate, Canelo ends up dropping the belt and says he's going back down to 154 pounds to fight Liam Smith. I mean, I haven't really seen that much of Liam Smith. And, you know, I think at this point, that's probably something where Canelo should be able to score an easy victory. I may be wrong, but right now, as I say, that's basically a win for Canelo. As far as like this thing here with Eubank Jr., I do agree that this is, you know, the best fighter that Golovkin has faced. But on that Willie Monroe comment, I'm thinking that if Willie Monroe had like a little bit more experience or something like that and still had that type of skill, then I think he would have been able to get at Gennady Golovkin, because like you were saying, like within like rounds three, rounds four, and rounds five, he was pretty much getting it in. He was pretty much getting it with Triple G, and you know, getting the better of him in that particular fight. So I think if Willie Monroe, you know, came in there with a little bit more experience, he probably would have given Golovkin a little bit more than he would have expected to handle. But on this thing here with Golovkin and Eubank Jr., it's going to be a big fight there in the UK. Rooting for Chris Eubank to see if he can score that upset win. But he does have to work on his defense a little bit. He can't go in there looking like, who is it? Who did Canelo beat? What was it last year before that Canelo Cotto fight? Kirkland, James Kirkland, yeah. He can't go in there, you know, into this fight like James Kirkland, or he's going to, you know, it'll be a really early night for Chris Eubank Jr. You know, on that note, I'm pretty much going to close out this part of the show. Is there, like, any comments that any of y'all have?
Yeah, so my question would be is kind of toward what Terrell was saying, how well does Eubank actually box? Because, you know, Triple G ain't stupid. I think he knows that if he is a superior boxer, then that'll be the key to making this an easy fight and then turning it around and then clocking Eubank through boxing, you know, pretty much doing how he did the brawler with the swoop, the brawler with the swoop. I forgot his name. But, you know, it'll be similar to that, just boxing, jab him the whole night and then bust his face up when it's time to. So, mm-hmm. You know, hopefully he knows how to box. That's all I'm saying. Hopefully he knows how to box.
Right. I think he knows how to box. I think there's two things that separate him from Willie Monroe. I think he's a naturally physical, bigger guy. I think Eubank really is a super middleweight. And I think, you know, if you guys get a chance, I want you guys, if you can, watch the Dmitry Chernov-Eubank fight. It's a physically strong guy coming forward against Eubank. And Eubank did very well boxing. Even, you know, he got tested on his chin a couple of times. He got hit. And I think if you watch that fight, you will think that Eubank is a formidable opponent for Triple G. He's physically big, much bigger to me than Willie Monroe physically. Monroe is a better overall boxer, but Eubank has power. He can jab. He's the best overall fighter in terms of offense, defense, speed, skills, everything that makes a world-class fighter. I'm not saying that he'll beat Triple G, but I think he's the best person other than Canelo to me at super middleweight that can do it. I mean, at middleweight that can do it. I think he's just
right.
He physically has the tools, everything to me, except he lacks a little bit on the defense end. But other than that, I think he has all the tools to at least be competitive.
Yeah, I hope he's just not posturing like the last guy who was posturing with Triple G and then went in there and got blowed out. The dude who beat his wife or something like that. I'm sorry, that's how I remember him. But, you know, the news always accentuate bad stuff about people. The dude fight out of D.C. What's his name?
Dominic Wade.
Dominic Wade.
Yeah, because Wade was posturing the whole time through that fight. You know, had I not known that he was, like, soft-handed and stuff, and I was just, like, not into boxing, I'd have been like, oh, man, he going to do something, you know, just off of him posturing and stuff. So I hope it's not the same case where Eubank is posturing as well.
When you beat somebody into retirement, that has to basically count for something. I mean, people kind of like have Sergey Kovalev kind of fearsome because he ended up, you know, the results of a fight that he had with one opponent basically ended the opponent's life. So, I mean, at least, you know, this thing here with a career ended at Eubank Jr. scored over Nick Blackwell. I mean, that shows, like, how much, you know, power and how much skill, you know, he could potentially have in this particular fight.
Yeah, I got to get a rest on him, you know, so I can speak a little bit more intelligently about him. So I'll watch a few of his fights.
I want to ask one more question about the Canelo and the whole A-side thing. I understand, you know, who's backing these guys and, you know, who's paying to see these guys. But we said something about Oscar De La Hoya, and he called in to bring Bernard Hopkins down and wait. Now, my thing is always based on in-ring talent, and I want to know, should he been in a position to do that after he basically lost to Felix Sturm? Or should Canelo, no matter who's backing them, should they be able to call the shots based on what their in-ring is? Because if Oscar almost lost or did lose to Felix Sturm, should he have still been in the position to tell Bernard Hopkins to come down? And that's kind of my issue with the A-sides and the B-sides and all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's directly related to, you know, what you're saying, this whole A-side, B-side. It's not necessarily about, you know, who has what belt, who has this belt, who has that belt. It's basically a business move. And it is pretty much, you know, been like that, you know, for ages. I mean, from the time of, you know, Oscar to Floyd Mayweather, you know, pretty much to now. I mean, even, you know, Floyd Mayweather, you know, basically agreed with, you know, this whole thing or the actions of Oscar De La Hoya and Canelo Alvarez in reference to, you know, basically dangling out the WBC middleweight belt and saying, hey, if you ain't down with, you know, getting it done on our terms, then, hey, if you want the belt, fine, you could have it. But you ain't getting this big fight against me. That ain't going to happen. You can keep fighting whoever you need to fight. You know, this whole thing with Eubank, this is probably, you know, other than that pay-per-view fight that he had, you know, with Lemieux, this is probably going to be his highest
you know, grossing fight that he's going to have so far. But, I mean, after that, it's like, what is he going to do? Is he going to move up to super middleweight or what, you know? But with Canelo, I mean, here you are, you got a sellout crowd at the T-Mobile Arena against the Americon. Not necessarily sure what the gate was for that sellout crowd, but overall, seeing around 600,000 pay-per-view buys in comparison to, you know, 150,000 pay-per-view buys for Canelo. I mean, not Canelo, but Golovkin and Lemieux with the $2 million gate at Madison Square Garden. Yeah, yeah, and a $2 million gate at Madison Square Garden, which kind of like they say they average it out at $100 a ticket. You know, so that doesn't necessarily bode well in, you know, contract negotiations. As far as like overall percentages go, like who makes what, you know, who gets this, who gets that, and who makes what, you know. So when you have all of that on your side, you basically hold all the cards. Why would you make any concessions? That's how Oscar and Canelo are going at that potential fight against Gennady Golovkin.
But I guess they're not winning in the ring though, and that's my point. That to me, it just seemed like the mentality of wrestling, where if you sell merchandise or if you sell tickets, then you're the A side. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. We give you the stars. You don't necessarily make the stars. We give you the stars. We tell you who the stars is because you're not necessarily producing in the ring. You're just producing outside of the ring that allows for you to be sell marketed. It doesn't matter what you do in the ring. And that's where I have a problem with today.
Yeah, so
yeah,
on world rank.
In that aspect.
Yeah, so world rank. I feel where you're coming from in that, you know, it's not actually your body of work that people base off whether you can call the shots. It's pretty much your who has the greatest ability to sell, or whatever terminology I want to use, who has the greatest ability to make us money.
You can put it there.
And so, you know, I mean, that's not right, but the fact that, you know, we live in a capitalistic society, it is what it is. And, you know, it would be great to kill because, you know, people like Andre Ward would get their credit. People like, well, Floyd Mayweather got their credit after Oscar De La Hoya pretty much. But, you know, Rigondeaux's credit, you know, but I don't know. I know. And Warren, you answer this too. Let's say that if you were a performer, a rapper or something like that, and you know, okay, let's say Drake. Let's say Drake and B-level rapper are in the concert. I think that the fact that Drake bring in more fans to be the biggest hit of that concert that they share together. Even though, let's say, like, somebody may rap better than the person. Let me not use Drake, because Drake he does well at what he does. But let's say Birdman or somebody. Birdman versus one of his rappers in his stable who don't bring in no people. You know, the person who bring in the most people get the biggest pump. The rapper who's more lyrical and can sing better getting the most money. You kind of – do y'all kind of see my point, or should I explain it better?
No, you make a great analogy at that aspect, but it's not like Birdman acknowledges that I'm the best. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, you know, Birdman is being sold like he's the best rapper alive. And, you know, that's the difference. They're being sold as they're the best at this. Or, you know, you look at pound for pound ratings, Canelo is at the top, or he's top five, or, you know, he's that level, you know, and it just doesn't, you know, to me it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for Oscar De La Hoya to be able to call Bernard Hopkins, and he just lost, you know, come down to a weight, and he just lost to Felix Sturm. Like, this stuff like that just doesn't, you know, stuff like that just doesn't make sense to me in the ring aspect. So
right.
I can see Canelo. I'm not saying Canelo shouldn't get the bulk of the money. I'm not saying any of that. But what I'm saying is a fight should be made based on the best fighting the best, not cherry picking. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's avoiding someone. Like, that's not good for the sport. You know, even though, you know, he's the face of the sport, what it looks like the face of the sport ducking someone, that just doesn't – you're selling me this product, but he's not – he's ducking. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but he's not living up to what he's claiming to be, pretty much what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I would like to see him fight Golovkin. I would. I would have liked him not to have fought Amir Khan for his last fight as well, either. But you know.
Well, all that what you guys are speaking of goes back into the politics of boxing and the bottom line, which is money. I mean, has Triple G earned? Well, earned has he done enough at this point to justify being the A side? That's an easy answer. That the answer is no. Even though he's claiming to be the best talent out there in the division, it looks like that could be true. But we know just from the past example, when Triple G had a pay-per-view fight, I forget the number of buys, but it wasn't nothing that popped your eye, nothing like that at all. So what is if that's the case, which was the case, what is there to suggest that he could be the A-side and carry all the promotional obligations and generate enough interest in this fight to be the A-side? And he doesn't have that. He doesn't have that. And now at this point, Canelo's camp, they're posturing, manipulating, making the right moves to ensure that they are the right side. Hell, with all the stuff that Canelo's doing with the Dodgers and stuff like that, point when they do fight, this fight might be a damn 60-40 split the way they're going. It really might, because they're basically saying we have a body of work against established opponents. We have the network. We have the supporters, which is largely Mexican people at this point. We have the right date, the right location. All that stuff factors into the A-side and in regards to negotiations on how much get. So I would not be surprised if this is a 60-40 split. And it's going to be presented to Triple G, like, if you really want to fight, then take this. This is the deal. Take it.
And should it even be 60-40, though, Terrell? Should it even be 60-40?
No, I think something like 55-45, I'd be totally fine with that.
No.
I'm saying it should be 70-30.
Yeah. It should be about, like, either 65-35 or 70-30. I mean, you gotta look at it over the course of – because there's, like, you know, there's a video out of on YouTube of, like, one guy that's basically talking about it. And he talks about, you know, the overall background of, you know, what Canelo has done over the course of his career in comparison to what Golovkin has done over the course of his career. And when you, like, put those two things together, then they kind of see why Canelo is not only the A side, but he should get, like, a significant larger percentage of the purse compared to Golovkin. Even though Golovkin has, you know, basically all of the titles, is basically what Canelo has done over the course of his career that kind of trumps what Golovkin has done over the course of his career. Being under Golden Boy, I would pretty much say that being under Golden Boy helps him get to that point. You know, but even then, it is what it is. I mean, there's no other way that I could basically explain it. When you face the likes of Shane Mosley, Floyd Mayweather, Austin Trout, Miguel Cotto, who else? Josecito Lopez.
Kirkland.
Let's see. Kirkland. You know,
and he might face Manny Pacquiao.
And there's talk saying he might, you know, end up facing Manny Pacquiao down the line after this fight with Liam Smith. So, I mean, who knows with that one. But, you know, that's the overall thing. Like, he's able to get those type of fights because of who he is. He's, like, basically the number one draw in Mexico and the most popular fighter in Mexico. And as a result, brings in all the viewers. So you can't. I mean, there's no other way to explain that. I mean, I'll post like a link to like a YouTube clip, on like Twitter or you know on the Boxing Source page. That'll basically you know show all of that.
Gil. But on that note, I'm going to just close out everything here for this week. We'll catch y'all same time, 7:30 Sunday, the July 10th, here on the Emerin Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to catch the sister show on Tuesday night at 8:30, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports with the execution of Matthew Long. And like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing, to hit and not get hit, not to send and trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good one.